Hi, you're listening to Switch On, a podcast to shape the principles of modern leadership. We will be discussing the real experience with successful leaders and learn from them how are they tackling real-life, real-time challenges and build on their learnings for tomorrow's success. In this series, we'll focus on how we are bringing vision to life. Having a purpose, a vision alone, is not enough to be successful. Both require action. Without action, vision is nothing more than a dream. The key to success is to stay focused and be realistic about the current situation and then learn perfect along the way. But as soon as we identify it, we need to start living it. Welcome to this episode of Switch On. Today, we'll talk about what to consider when building a roadmap from vision to reality. Your vision and purpose need to be defined before you dive into a meaningful strategy. You need to know where the company wants to end up and why. Yet without the realistic customer-centric strategy, you will not get there. Customers are firmly in the driving seat, and with it comes a required change in how you build and nurture relationships with potential and existing customers. And every time a customer achieves their purpose, the company that enabled them to do so gets rewarded. So I'm thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Amadea Dubovišek. Amadea is an owner and managing director of consulting company Publiuna. She's focused on strategic planning, marketing positioning, and with her vast experience, she's helping companies to develop customer-oriented market philosophy and provides hands-on support to the companies with implementation of strategic initiatives. She's a two-time Phoenix Award winner for the best consulting project at Chamber of Commerce and Industry of Slovenia. Amadea has written two books, Strategic Sales Management and Making Marketing Strategies Work, a guide to effective implementation and a must-read for all leaders during transformation. Welcome, Amadea.
Hello, good afternoon, Helena.
Great to have you with us. Bringing vision to life is a big challenge. You are ultimately implementing change, a shift so businesses really become customer-centric in their orientation and execution. What is driving you on your journey?
What is driving me, Helena? Well, difficult to answer, but I think that my mission is to help companies sharpen their strategic focus and somehow make sensitive decisions on how to create and sustain growth with the increased weight of value-added components. This is important. This is also not so easy. I have worked with a great variety of clients and even through consulting projects or executive development or employee training, always on the same theme, how to make good strategy and how to implement it as effectively as possible.
Admirable ambition and such a relevant topic for today. Every company needs a strategy, even if only a robust one, and every company needs a purpose, a vision to influence its success. But bringing this vision into reality is another story. How come that the implementation gap is still a relevant problem?
Yeah, the most important factor which distinguishes successful companies from less successful ones is not just the ability to formulate excellent marketing strategies, but of course also the ability to realize those strategies, as I already said, as effectively as possible. However, companies often do not implement their strategies to the extent that they want to. And I spent a lot of time studying the discrepancy between a carefully formulated strategic plan and its less precise implementation. Such a lack of alignment, as we all know, but which companies are rarely aware of, can have a detrimental effect on both customer interactions and final business results of the company. Sometimes this gap is caused by inappropriate business models, but much more often it is due to a lack of good managerial practices, which, if employed, would much better connect employee behaviors with the company's strategic orientations. Because the main task and concern of strategic management is namely to coordinate both processes, strategic planning and implementation. Many studies show that managers are much more trained to focus on analyzing and planning. This is what they learn at universities and later also in the business schools. And they don't have any subject called implementation of strategy. And this is why they are used to simply delegate or sometimes just left implementation to employees, like, we formulated the strategy, now you go and execute it. and this can hardly work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, it's true that 10% of the time and energy is dedicated approximately for strategy formulation, while 90% applies to strategy implementation. Or with other words, 10% of people prepare a strategy and 90% of people implement it. Nevertheless, as I already said, top management should be responsible for both strategic planning and implementation. Now, here is the main point. Management who plans the strategy has in mind certain logic, desired behavior of employees needed to achieve planned goals, flexibility, speed, and engagement of employees. Do all these things really happen? No. Because employees have their own logic, their own self-interest. They are often even not enough engaged. From the results of a yearly study conducted globally by the Gallup Research and Management Consulting Company, as we know, one of the largest international research institutions, more than 50% of employees on average are unengaged in their work. These employees put time, but not energy or passion into their work. So unengaged employees typically show up to work and contribute the minimum effort required. Mm-hmm. In 2020, Gallup tracking found an even greater drop in employment engagement, especially among managers and leaders. Since employee engagement is highly related to many performance outcomes, and even more so in tough times, the question becomes, will this be a temporary or a long-lasting phenomenon? Now, the problem is that you don't see the consequences of unengagement at the first glance. Companies don't react until the problem becomes bigger. They say, we are all doing well, our sales increases, our market share increases, but they don't see the quality of this growth. Is it sustainable? Mm-hmm. Are customers really happy? Mm-hmm. Or they already think about switching to other supplier who will better understand their needs and expectations. This type of myopia is not so rare. Many companies are self-complacent. In fact, their managers are. They don't see they could be much better in doing their businesses, that they could be much more strategic, offering much better customer experiences, that they could take much better advantage out of their talents and lead better their employees. They don't see these things. In fact, Gallup's experts, who also found that only 18% of managers were truly capable of leading others, this is also something that tells us a lot. This means that many companies are operating at a much worse level than they could be. If 82% of managers are not leading their people effectively, we are left with the question, how many companies are effectively implementing their strategies? And the last thing, Helena, I wonder, what if companies hired a manager who would function as a kind of chief implementation officer, who would comprehensively and consistently oversee the elimination of all those deficiencies which have been proven to hinder the implementation of marketing strategies? I'm convinced that by doing this, most companies would take better advantage of their potential and most certainly have an easier time convincing their customers.
Yeah, it is a problem nowadays. I see it also when working with customers. But I also noticed that the leadership role is changing. I guess today we can all agree that everything can happen. Our customers are changing their behaviors and evolving their needs and expectations. That is why flexibility and adaptability play a major role in our response to the market. Yet we don't know what is coming next. You're a strong supporter of having contingency plan ready, not just one, but a few. Tell us what a good contingency plan in your view is, and why do we need them?
Now we have to go back to the strategy. Every strategy is like a suit, which is tailor-made to the measurements of a company responding to market opportunities to the best of its abilities. And due to increased market saturation and also the disruption brought about by digital technologies, strategic scenarios are in constant state of shift. And this has to be considered in the implementation phase as well. But as already explained, this is an area where companies have traditionally been inconsistent. They do not adapt implementation quick enough, if at all, according to the demands of their new strategic directions. However, the fact that implementation is extremely important does not mean that companies can succeed without a strategy. All employees must know the main strategic orientations of the company in order to be able to behave in harmony with them. In companies, I often ask employees what their vision and strategy is, and I get at least 3 or 5 different answers, mm-hmm. or even more. And if we do not know the strategy, how should we behave according with it? Already Kaplan and Norton, the authors of Balanced Scorecard, found in 1996 that 70% of companies do not implement the strategy effectively enough because they do not link employee behavior to it. 10 years later, the Forbes magazine asked Fortune 500 chief executive officers if they were happy with their strategy implementation. Only 13% of chief executive officers agreed. But if we don't know where we are going, how are we going to get there? Strategy is a compass. It is a signpost showing where employees have to row so that everyone can get to a certain point as quick as possible. It is not enough to know that we have to sail north, but mm-hmm. exactly at what latitude in the north our goal is. They are not supposed to sail there on different routes or zigzags, but straight to the point and as fast as possible. Otherwise, they can easily be overtaken by competitors who are probably rowing in the same direction. However, if we stick to this metaphor, it is almost illusory to expect that the journey towards the final goal across the ocean will pass without any unpredictable event. And it is precisely these events that might happen that we need to anticipate also in the context of strategic planning and have B or even C scenarios prepared in advance. When there is a storm, for example, in the middle of the sea, it is too late for management to meet and discuss with which sails to continue the journey or to discuss what else should be done. Should the direction of journey be changed or should the expedition be even interrupted or canceled? A contingency plan is a plan of different scenarios. It is a prediction of unpredictable circumstances and events. For something like this, we need to analyze things well in advance. See a big picture of what is going on in the ocean. Of course, we cannot predict everything, but the more we can, the more successful we will be. It is definitely better for employees to know in advance what to do if the things go wrong. The captain just says, plan B, and everyone knows what that means. Although we all prefer easier and predictable routes, these are becoming increasingly rare in our lives. There is hard fight all the time, and we have to change our plans often if we want to achieve our goals. We live in a time of hyper competition when the sea is full of ships rushing to the same goals. Or if we use another metaphor, there are many similar fish swimming in the oceans, biting each other to gain an advantage. As a result, a lot of blood flows and the oceans turn red. And despite the fact that we all have it written in strategies that we want to go to the blue oceans where there is less competition, mm-hmm. this path is thorny and often unpredictable. That's why we need a contingency plan. And that's why already Mintzberg Henry Mintzberg, legendary guru of management, distinguished between three strategies: intended strategy, emerging strategy, and realized strategy. Realized strategy at the end is always a combination of predictable and unpredictable things.
So true what you're saying, and you use the beautiful metaphor of the sea and what can happen going across that sea as well. Love it. But you're so right. With so many moving parts that we are experiencing, many people have actually forgotten about the approach of doing the pre-mortem as well, that is gaining quite a lot of momentum currently. And it's an important way also how to try to predict what might happen going backwards, right?
Exactly.
In situations like today, when companies are rethinking existing and developing new operating models, they sometimes forget that they are not transforming for their own sake, but that they are transforming and doing it for their customers. Putting customers front and center is critical. And with that, I don't mean just on paper or putting customer orientation as a value on the website. What does real customer centricity mean?
What being customer-centered or customer-oriented means? A simple and overall answer is that customer-oriented or customer-centered company places customers, their expectations, needs, and desires at the center of its entire operation. And accordingly, the company's strategy, business processes, structures, and systems which support such an operation must all be designed with this in mind. This is the simple question, but much, much more difficult to realize all these things.
Yeah.
The current overall saturation of markets is namely forcing companies to introduce strategic changes to make their products or services more attractive to customers than those of the competitors. If they want to obtain a share in the market, retain what they already have, or even increase their market share, they have to guarantee the value that customers want. To be perceived as customer-centric, managers need to foster customer orientation on the level of the company and on the level of the individual employee. A customer orientation, first and foremost, requires an understanding of the concepts of value creation in a modern marketing environment, as well as the concepts of organizational behavior. These concepts must be seen in the mindset of managers and in the behavior of employees. Otherwise, their potential for working with customers will simply not be fully realized. I will repeat, these concepts should be understood by all employees at every organizational level and in all business functions, not just in marketing or sales, for example. Answers to these questions of how a company can be more interesting, effective, and imaginative for customers are often hidden in exactly in the degree to which a company's employees are truly customer-oriented and in how well companies can build a relationship with them. And understanding and uncovering customers' needs and establishing trust with them means listening to customers more precisely. But this, of course, requires the knowledge and commitment of employees, especially those who have direct contact with customers. Now, top managers must always ensure that actions of their employees are dictated by the voice of the customer. But before, this is now the tricky thing, before they do that, they must also know alone how to listen to that voice themselves. Put differently, rather than trying to foster customer centricity through marketing communications, or as you said, written it on the paper, managers need to remind themselves that actions always speak louder than any words. Companies have to learn how to see things through their customers' eyes, something that is harder to do than may seem at first glance. In fact, the experiences have shown that both managers and employees have troubles doing this. Determining how customers view the way a company does business has in fact become a priority for top managers. They have to make sure that employees at all levels and in all departments and at all locations understand customer-oriented strategy and above all, that they feel inspired to work in accordance with it.
I would like us to touch another important element when we think about customers. And you said it beautifully the other day at Managers Association meetup when you said, at the end, it's about how we create value and how we bring this value closer to customers and how we retain part of that value for the company to fuel further growth. Based on your experience, what is the progress you are seeing toward a customer-first operating model, and what is still missing in your view?
Oh, this is a very good question, Helena. What is positive? What is positive is that everyone is saying that the customer comes first. And what is missing is that companies would really understand this saying, internalize it, and above all, really live it. I think that the results of the research done by the global management consulting firm Bain & Company explains everything. These results still resonate strongly around the business world. And what is it about? Bain & Company has done a wonderful research in cooperation with the research company Satmetrics in 2009 and repeated it, I think, in 2014 and again in 2019. Attention now. This research shows that 80% of chief executive officers were convinced that their companies were delivering a superior customer experience, while only 8% of their customers agreed with that sentiment. This is a huge gap between what top managers believe about value they create for customers and what customers see and feel, what is their perception about that value. Now, we don't need academic explanation to understand the customers, but it is still good to understand a few basic marketing concepts. Few people in companies really know what market positioning, for example, is, although it is the basis of every strategy and every business model. When I ask people what a business model is, I get a number of different answers. The same when I ask about the strategy and vision. How then are we supposed to talk to each other and understand customers if we don't speak the same language?
True.
Now, it's true, yeah? And this happens too often in companies. And if I touch a little bit the positioning, the market positioning, we need to know that customers always make trade-offs between the benefits on one side, the benefits they get from buying a product or service, and the price they have to pay for those benefits. Depending on how they perceive benefits and price and how they compare them with the competitive ones, a company should think about the suitability of their market position. A company's goal is to meet the needs of customers, but in such a way as to leave no room in their minds for other competitors. Positioning focuses on the rational and emotional benefits which customers receive from using a product or service, and these benefits must be unique and sustainable. Very few companies truly succeed in positioning themselves in a significantly different way than their competitors. Companies whose products lack originality and uniqueness are quickly replaced with substitutes, and this is only a step away from becoming a commodity. Without effective, long-term, sustainable differentiation, there is no positioning. And without positioning, there can be no business model or even a business model innovation. And a business model is a tool that helps companies create and deliver value and, of course, retain a part of the value in the form of profit for the company. And this definition appears to be the most complete and is widely accepted. A business model is sound if a company increases value for the customer and simultaneously creates a revenue model which also makes it possible to capture a portion of this value for itself. But as can be seen in practice, The development of a sustainable and profitable business model is an exceptionally large challenge for companies, even if they strive to create it with the help of partnerships and alliances. So to put yourself in the shoes of customers, to think with their head, this seemed to me to be absolute biggest challenge for companies, because it's really not easy. Every director who acts as a customer in the afternoon knows how he feels as a customer, what he wants. But when he comes to the office in the morning next day, he starts thinking and behaving differently because he is under the pressure to create results. If we look in the long run, more sustainably, the growth might not be so huge, but customers would certainly be more satisfied. Some customers want innovative products, some don't at all. But no one is bothered by the company's concern for his desires, the concern for how he feels. I think that's what's missing the most.
It needs to be perceived as a value as well. Thank you very much, Amadea, for sharing this insight into the gap, into the perception that actually exists, right? And if there is a gap, that means that we are doing maybe something wrong. And we need to change something. And what some businesses really don't realize when they are making the change or when they are implementing the change is that there is a difference between efficiency and effectiveness. We've touched this subject the last time we have talked. And with transformation, where the company puts their focus on, you have said it beautifully, has consequences. What are the areas where companies don't put enough attention per your experience? And what should they stop doing in your view?
Oh, this is a beautiful question. Thank you for it. Because I love this topic very much. Because I think it needs really a lot of attention in nowadays management world. Because one area which managers pay too little attention to, despite offering exceptional opportunities for growth, is area of customer interactions, which can be an important source of value creation. And here, the sales function plays a decisive role, as sales employees are the first link, the intermediary, so to say, between a company and its customers. They meet customers actually first. This is why they directly influence the way a marketing strategy is implemented. They are the crucial resource for the implementation of a company's customer centricity as well. But the various needs of customers demand various methods of creating value in the sales process. And in order to avoid value mismatches, a segmentation of customers according to their perception of value should be done. It is very, very much recommended. Some customers see namely value exclusively in the product or service itself. They focus on the cost-related elements of value and consider the product or service to be a commodity, which can be easily substituted with that of a competing company. They want a low price and easy access to a product, since the entire value for them is considered within the product. A personal sales approach does not offer any benefits to them whatsoever, but instead presents additional costs, which they would prefer to avoid. In these circumstances, it would be better for companies to find a cheaper way of reaching the customers, electronically, for example, by telephone, through a catalog, or even virtually, as this allows for a simple exchange. Then we have other type of customers. The other type of customers typically focus on the external elements in the value equation. For them, value is perceived not only in the product, but also outside of the product, primarily in the way it is sold. They highly value the assistance and support of salespeople and enjoy spending time together with them in the search for a solution which is tailored to their particular needs. These customers are prepared to build a relationship with the sales force and they are also prepared to pay for the understanding and efforts they receive. This is a big difference with the first type of the customers. Through this advisory sales approach called consultative selling, well-trained and well-managed salespeople can create exceptional value for both the customer and the company. If we were to use an analogy, we could say that the first type of customer wants the biggest possible piece of cake for the least amount of money, while the second type is looking for a large piece which offers various additional benefits and is also willing to pay for them, sharing that value with the salesperson or his company. And there is no hierarchy at all among these sales approaches. The only important difference between them lies in the amount of investment required of the company to create customer value in the sales process. So in transactional sales, this investment is directed towards reducing costs and increasing the ease of purchase. On the other hand, consultative sales demands and can afford to invest more to create benefits for the customer. In this way, they can then justify those efforts and higher sales costs with a higher price. Many companies, especially large ones, achieve their financial goals with both kinds of customers. And as you mentioned, efficiency and effectiveness, also the sales function can be efficient or effective, and sometimes needs to be a combination of both. In transactional sales, there is an emphasis on fast execution, as we said, which the company achieves by reducing all unnecessary costs and allowing for purchases which are as convenient and simple as possible. And this is called efficiency in sales process. In consultative sales, sales success is not measured by the number of customers a salesperson will obtain in given time frame, but by a salesperson's ability to create a sufficient amount of value which convinces customers to make a purchase. And this is called effectiveness in the sales process. So the development of strong long-term customer relations has become an important way to gain a competitive advantage. It is precisely this emphasis on the buyer-seller relationship which has most likely led to a new general theory of marketing and which can be used to explain modern marketing practices better than any other. So what is missing? I believe that the most common mistakes top managers make within this field is to view the consultative or relationship selling, as some call it, merely as a sales tactic and not as a strategic choice of the company, which requires a change in mindset and culture, cooperation with other functions, and a strong commitment from all managers and employees. So dividing sales function into two important and different sales approaches to customers, this is actually the basis of any marketing strategy, because don't forget, the first contact of company started with its sales forces, and this should be taken into account when we think strategically about how we create value for customers.
You said it really well earlier that while trying to improve the position on the market, we need to understand what is relevant to customers. What are their questions? What, when, where they are looking for answers. And everything plays a role in their experience and decisions to purchase. It's about how we serve our customers. How do you see this shaping our ways of working? And how is this directing prioritization discussion and the shaping the teams you are working with?
Yeah, today, customers want the attention of employees in every interaction they have with the company. They want to know that the company respects them and has their best interests in mind. They expect that employees will truly make efforts to find solutions to their problems. Customers don't like complicated processes and in general do not want to listen to explanations about any potential problems the company may have. This simply does not interest them. Most of them would like to know how the company will meet their expectations as simply and as quickly as possible at every point of contact. This is why chief executive officers today undoubtedly want to see important changes in the behavior of their employees, namely an increase in their abilities to carry out service-oriented tasks, which employees should demonstrate in every job. And this is regardless of whether we are talking about service-based or manufacturing companies, which are now increasingly introducing service logic into their marketing strategies as well. Naturally, the employees who have direct contact with customers are the most exposed. And among them, as I already said, salespeople are on the very, very front lines. A successful strategy to retain customers depends upon how a company deepens its relationship with customers, thereby gaining their loyalty. As many studies have shown, the costs for these activities are still lower than the price of obtaining new customers. However, numerous studies, most recent and older, show that despite their imaginative strategies, many companies do not achieve customer loyalty to the extent that they really want. Even though they invest a large amount of money into loyalty programs, use customer relationship management technologies, and improve their services, most of these initiatives do not bring the desired results or lead to real customer satisfaction. Unfortunately, usually just disappointment. What is usually missing is a spark between the customer and the employee, a spark which transforms a prudent customer into one who is enthusiastic about a specific brand. This spark is created by employees through competent behavior, which is also supported by emotions. Yes, emotions. And enables a company to gain trust in all those moments which are most important to customers. Every company should know how to determine those key moments in their given industry. Supposedly, for airlines, there are at least 30 of these key moments. Some of them certainly include making reservations, check-in, boarding procedures, the handling of baggage, ticket upgrades, and so on. All of these moments provide a company with direct opportunities to shine and prove themselves in front of customers. However, there are only a few carriers which ensures that their passengers receive a positive customer experience, thus strengthening customer loyalty. A good example of this is Southwest Airlines and Singapore Airlines, and we can find in management literature mainly these two that are a really good example, yeah. But when speaking about airlines, I have to mention Jan Carlson, who is considered to be a legend of Swedish management. In a mere year and a half, Mr. Carlson, at the beginning of the 1980s, rescued Scandinavian airline system from collapse. He pulled the company out of losses, turned a profit, eliminated flight delays, and on top of all of that, he improved virtually every service so much that after barely 2 years of his leadership, a company received the Global Airline of the Year award, and that was in 1983. It has been decades since then. Carlson's book, Moments of Truth, is still being reprinted and translated, and Carlson, who has the reputation of a successful businessman, is regularly invited to lecture around the world. What Mr. Carlson said, every customer interaction counts. When a customer meets an employee from any company, something happens between them, one acts upon the other, one influences the other. He called these points moments of truth, while today's leading sales consulting company, Miller Heiman Group, emphasizes the expression defining moments. We would say that these are those moments of truth which customers find particularly important and upon which the success of the company depends the most. So both Carlson and the Miller Heiman Group define these points as moments in which customers have a chance to evaluate how well a company has met their expectations. Or these could be moments in which customers were especially impressed despite not having any expectations at the time. These touch points can provide a company with a high quality advantage over their competition. Carlson was a visionary, so it is for me still hard to believe that these insights into how customers should be treated are only now so quickly spreading around the world. Clearly, companies have exhausted all their ammunition and have no choice other than to truly, not just declaratively, put the customer first and subordinate all their decisions and actions to customer needs.
Because the goal is the relationship, creating strong, even emotional customer connection to a brand or a product can lead to loyalty and lasting long-term engagement with your customer base, where benefits include repeat, ongoing business, positive advocacy, and willingness on the customer part to provide valuable feedback to the company and their peers. But when we take a customer viewpoint, everything changes. You mentioned it earlier, customers constantly weigh what they are getting for their money through their experience, and they usually get what they pay for. What should companies put more attention to surprise their customers and increase their value?
We have to be clear about one thing, Helena. If a company just meets the expectations of customers, their experience will be neutral. If it does not, it will be negative. It is only when expectations are exceeded that customers have a positive experience. Many research showed that clients who had a positive experience were prepared to invest more money into the purchase of other related products or services. And those who had negative experience reduced their activities with the company. The negative moments which customers experience are a grave threat to companies. It is also dangerous when customer reactions are neutral and managers are convinced that everything is okay just because no one is actively complaining. Interactions between customers and companies become even more important if customers find themselves in trouble and need a quick response, a special service, advice, or a solution to a problem which goes beyond a company's usual practices. We all know such cases, either from actual business or from everyday life. For example, the loss of a credit card, a canceled flight, a ruined piece of clothing, or the need for investment advice and such things. Managing these moments demands an instinctive response on the part of employees, who must place the emotional needs of customers before their own and before the company's standard course of action for such situations. In these cases, innate empathy can be of great help to employees, but employee empowerment also plays an important role, and this is something that superiors have to provide. In the case of negative and neutral experiences, companies will find it difficult to gain the loyalty of customers. Here it is worth remembering that loyalty depends on the weakest link in a series of individual experiences. It is enough that one out of 10 experiences is negative. The customer will remember this one. Also, one must not forget that customer responses, whether enthusiastically positive or disappointed and negative, are not immediately apparent. Unfortunately, it is exceedingly difficult to manage all these moments of truth which customers experience, and in reality, each and every moment does not carry also the same weight or meaning for them. For this reason, companies have to determine which of these moments are the most important to customers and do everything possible to ensure that customers experience those moments as truly exceptional. Companies have to take that additional step to really anchor themselves in their customers' hearts. This is the only way they can positively surprise them, the only way they can delight them. I remember some of examples. For example, a famous Walmart, when Walmart realized that customers felt it was important to be greeted as they entered the store. Walmart hired someone to do just that. Soon after, they additionally began offering customers a bottle of water or something else to make them happy. But here is something tricky. Once a company sets high standards, it must maintain them consistently or even raise them from time to time. If they can charm customers on the first visit, they need to do so again on the second, the third, and so on. If a company does not manage to do this, the inconsistency will certainly not pay dividends. Customers need to know that excellent service is not reserved for those times when a company has fewer customers or for when its employees are just in a good mood. Rather, they must know that this is an integral part of the company's everyday offering or commitment. How then can a company make sure that customers do not experience either a negative or neutral response, but instead only have positive experiences throughout all those key moments of truth? If you are a manager, can you quickly evaluate how many of these key moments there are? As seen through the eyes of customers, are these moments positive, neutral, or negative? If you don't know, this is not the best thing for your company, and it's time to roll up your sleeves and get to work, I would say.
Well said. With every interaction, we learn something new, and those critical moments, those difficult situations that customers experience are really crucial in shaping the perceptions that they have about us, about our service, about our product, about our brand. When we are trying to solve their problem, and if we fail there, we haven't done much, and we have possibly even lost that customer. It happens. I remember you saying, we are never so good that we couldn't learn something new. Having a growth mindset means becoming a learner. It's a belief that everyone can grow and develop. This applies also to the learning about customers, understanding that being diverse and inclusive is a positive thing while making a difference. How about involving customers? And in certain cases, also suppliers in the process of identification of new opportunities. To support innovation, try to predict what might be relevant going forward and to improve the experience. What is your view on that?
Okay, some important concepts which address improvements in customer and supplier interactions are total quality management, as we know, service quality frameworks, customer relationship management, and customer experience management. Both academics and practitioners agree that customer experience management is crucial because it focuses on managing every interaction across the scope of the customer journey. But another fruitful avenue to consider in interactions with customers has been provided by what is referred to as customer engagement management. This concept suggests that customers themselves could be now active and influential participants in marketing efforts. For example, if they so wanted, they could play an active role in customer acquisition and retention, information exchange, and even sourcing new ideas for product innovation. Companies should therefore look for ways to manage or guide such instances of customer engagement very proactively. There is no doubt that digital technologies are also affecting the customer engagement. Today's customers have access to a wealth of information, but they also have many opportunities to be active contributors to information generation and exchange with their peers. This has helped to create a more informed and collaborative role of the customer. However, companies often make the mistake of investing too much into interactions which mean little or nothing to customers, and forget about those moments which are truly important to them, moments in which the company could really shine. These are important. And in order to know how to more wisely allocate valuable company resources, managers must gain an insight into the experiences of customers, into their feelings and how they think, as this is the only way for company to improve relationships with customers and influence their purchasing choices. And the same is valid also for suppliers. A company has to be constantly on the lookout for the different experiences its customers and suppliers have, and must constantly encourage them to give feedback. Unfortunately, there are still a lot of companies which are satisfied with the answers to trivial satisfaction surveys which are handed out on an annual basis. Instead, a company needs to create a system with someone in charge of this system to gather information and also make sure that it takes care of any improvements that customers and suppliers want.
You're so right when you're mentioning customer context. The context plays a very important role in being there at the right time, at the right occasion. Now, if we circle back to where we started with a vision, there's a Japanese proverb that goes, vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare. What are the three sticky notes we need to remember when bringing vision to life so that implementation drives success while serving customers better? What is opening and what is closing doors to success in the corporate world?
Well, in short, people and their behavior, employee engagement and empowerment, and smart control over the implementation process. These are the three sticky notes from my point of view, Helena. Most of the problems in implementing marketing strategies stem from the gap between the desired and actual behavior of employees. This applies to their work with customers as well as co-workers. The desired behavior must be dictated by customer needs and the company's strategic objectives, while the actual behavior is always a reflection of how top managers design mechanisms to promote and control the desired behavior. Many studies, including mine, discovered that managers use control systems mostly inconsistently. This means they are sending mixed signals to employees, which is something even the most brilliant leadership cannot fix. In my last book, I clearly explain what control philosophy top managers must follow in the given market circumstances, of course, if they want to effectively realize their strategies. And by control philosophy, I mean everything that makes happier customers and happier employees. Control systems are the tools in the hands of managers, which allow a company to make better use of its resources and competitive advantages, and of course, to effectively achieve its strategic goals. In addition, managers can use them to more easily notice problems, better plan and communicate strategic goals, and coordinate the work of various functions. Finally, these systems can also make it easier for employees to take on responsibilities and get done their jobs.
Well said, Amadea. Paving the road from vision to reality is a step-by-step formula that will help turn the ideals contained in the vision and mission into results. And we have learned today that just defining the vision is not enough. Today's leaders need to actively participate in making it a reality by communicating successfully, embracing change, developing implementation plans, and creating operating models that make sense. By enabling value creation and bringing this value close to customers, transforming the company into a profitable, fulfilling reality. Thank you so much for joining us today, Amadea. I really like discussing this topic with you and I have really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
Thanks to you, Helena, for your interest. For me, it was also very great to share my ideas, to share my knowledge. And I believe that this knowledge will become even more important in the coming years, because as I said, companies have already spent all their ammunition and they have to turn to the basic, to their customers, to listen to them, to understand them, and to make everything they can for the customers.
So true. Great to have you with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Drop of Milk, an impact-driven business consultancy and expert on customer-focused digital transformation. You can learn more at dropofmilk.com.